Good morning, everyone, and thanks for coming to my talk so early. So today I'm going to talk about something we have been working on in the past 2 years. This is called something called printf debugging. And I hope that by the end of this talk, I can convince you that it is an important problem, and I can also show you how can we get it better, right? So a little bit about me. I'm a final year PhD candidate in UIUC and UC San Diego. And I'm about to join University of Toronto as a faculty, starting from next year. And my PhD work have been focusing on improving the log design and analysis for a failure diagnosis. And we have designed some tools to analyze the logs and also improving the quality of log messages. And currently, a lot of these tools are being requested for release by some large vendors, such as EMC, NetApp, Cisco, Qualcomm, Huawei. And also, we released some of the log improvement patches to the open source software. And many of them are already being confirmed and applied in the latest version. Right? So now let's begin the real talk. Right? So since this is a workshop talk, so please interrupt me with questions. So let's first look at something that we already know about, right? So we know that software fails. Okay? And in particular, software fails in the production environment. But when these production environment failures occur, they are very hard to debug. Okay? One of the main reasons is that reproducing these production failures is very hard. One of the reasons is that due to privacy concerns, customers might be reluctant to release their input that triggered the failure. And also, reproducing the failure requires recreating the same environment as in the production setting, and this can be forbiddingly expensive. All right. Then how do vendors debug these production failures? Well, they use log messages, such as printfs. All right. So these log messages are considered far less sensitive. And in fact, today, a lot of the customers are willing to share them with the vendors. For example, EMC, NetApp, Cisco, and Dell, these large vendors are collecting logs from over 50% of their customers. And according to a recent Sense survey, 99% of the organizations are collecting logs or plan to collect logs from their customers. And this further confirms the importance of log message because industry won't spend great effort to collect them unless their benefit outweighs their cost. Right. And these logging are also pervasive. Right. For example, as case study, we examined these four pieces of widely used open source software. And we found that each of them contains thousands of such log printing statements. And actually, on average, we found that for every 30 lines of code, there will be one line of log printing code. And once these log messages are collected, they are also very beneficial for diagnosing the failures. To further quantitatively measure this benefit, we did a simple study that we studied the diagnosis time of hundreds of real-world user-reported failures. And we found that failures with log message reported invariably have a shorter diagnosis time. And on average, log message can reduce the diagnosis time by more than half.
Since you invited questions, on your previous slide, you gave numbers of how many printfs there are.
Right.
Have you looked at how many of those actually emit log messages during production?
Well,
or the distribution?
Right. So, well, we don't have the exact number, but I can give you like some guts about it. First, I guess it's very few. Two reasons. One is that here I'm including all the logging printments, including all the verbosity mode. But in production settings, often only the error logs are enabled due to performance concerns. So those debug messages may never get enabled. And secondly is like this programs will only exercise a small portion of static code. So here I'm showing the static number of log and print statements. So there are, and especially given that only error log messages printed, So in the vast majority cases where it's normal execution, there won't be any log message. And in fact, if you look at these server programs, under the default configuration, there are almost no log message printed during normal execution. But whether they are printed even when the failure occurs, oh, that's a question. Actually, that's the question I'm going to talk about on Wednesday in the OSDI session. Right. All right, so I'll go on. Right. So now, despite this importance of log messages, in real world today, logging practice remains an arbitrary practice. Then a natural question we ask is that, how good are these log messages, right? Now let's first look at a very simple example, okay? So this is a real world piece of log from the Apache web server, okay? Now here the developers try to read the file, and if it's not successful, they will print a log message saying error while reading the original manifest, okay? Now by looking at this log message, is it good enough? Well, I guess many of you already have the answer, right? Indeed, it's not good enough that we should also record the file name. And in fact, a real-world user indeed hit this error message because of his own misconfiguration. And because there's no file name included, so he had to report it to the developers. And later, developers checked in a patch whose only purpose is to add this piece of information. Okay. But clearly, this is an afterthought. And if this piece of information was there in the very beginning, then not only it can save the user debugging time, but also they won't even bother the developers, right? So now let's look at a slightly more complicated example, okay? In this case, the user of the Squid web cache server encountered a failure that they reported that from time to time, the number of available file descriptors dropped down to nearly zero, but there's no log message printed. So since the developers cannot reproduce the failure, they had to ask a lot of the information from the users, including asking them to turn on the debug level log. And ask them for the configuration files, additional logging statement, and the DNS statistics. And in the end, it took them 45 exchanges between the user and developers before the failure is finally resolved. But actually, the root cause is quite simple. So what happened here is that the Squid cache, when they encounter a DNS lookup error, they did not handle it properly. But probably because they thought that they handled the failure, there's no point for them to log it. So they also did not log it, right? So what is interesting is that later, in addition to fix the bug, they also added an error message just to document this DNS lookup error. But again, this is the afterthought. So what we have seen from these two examples is that despite the benefit of the log message, the quality of log message in real world may be not as good, right? And as a consequence, they will significantly increase the debugging time by more than half, as I showed earlier. Our question we ask is that, how good are these logs in general? Because what I just showed you are just anecdotal examples, okay? And what are the common logging mistakes people make, and whether we can learn from them to improve the quality of log message even automatically, right? So here's a overview of all my works on the logging quality and log analysis. So we first we studied the quality of logging effectiveness in one of the paper, and we found a lot of limitations with the current log messages. And motivated by the problem, we further designed a tool called the Log Enhancer, which automatically enhances each log message by recording additional useful variable values. And also, we designed a tool that addressed the problem that what if there's no log message printed in the very beginning, right? And this work will be presented on Wednesday. Then all these tools, actually, they work on the source code level. It means that before the software is released, we can automatically analyze the source code and modify it to improve its logging, okay? And this modified version of source code can be released to compiled and released to the production environment. And later, when a failure occurs, we will have better log messages. And to further better analyze these log messages, we also developed a tool called Sherlock that can automatically analyze the printed logs and the source code to reconstruct the execution path. Okay. So in my talk today, I'm going to mainly focus on two pieces of work. One is to understand the logging effectiveness and what are the limitations, and also how can we improve the logging quality using an automatic approach called Log Enhancer. And then I'll briefly talk about Sherlock if I have time. And before I conclude, I would also talk about some of the future research agenda on logging. Right. So let me start with our characteristic study on logging effectiveness. So the goal of this study is really simple. It's to ask two questions. Right? So are today's log message good enough for diagnosis? And if not, what are the common problems? Right. Well, answering these two questions is simple, but answering them is not. Okay. One of the main problems is that since logging remains an arbitrary practice, there's really no specifications on the logging behavior. So we cannot objectively judge how good is a log message. Right? So to solve this problem, we decide to study the developer's own modifications to their logging code, and especially those modifications that are made in the form of afterthought. That, for example, only when the developers, when a failure occurs, the developers realize that they missed something in their log message, and they decide to modify them. All right. So, but how do we get these afterthought modifications from the source code? Right. So we studied four pieces of widely used open source software. We first studied their RCS system to get all the patches that modify the logging code. However, not all the patches modify the logging code afterthought. Right? For example, in this case, in this patch, while the log message is modified, it's actually not because of the problem of the logging code, but more likely because the developers want to consistently rename a variable name from fname to pname. Right? So clearly, we want to filter these examples out from our study. Then how do we do that? Is that we use a very simple heuristic, that we know that the log messages are often printed because under certain conditions. And so if we found that there is a patch where the log messages are modified, but its log printing condition is not modified, then more likely it's an afterthought. Right? So we just use this very simple heuristic to prune out all these patches that are not afterthought. And in our manual verification, we found this heuristic is indeed effective. Right. So from now on, I will use the word modifications to refer to these modifications as afterthought. Right. Then our first finding our answer to the first question is we found that indeed programmers will often make mistakes in writing their log messages in the first place. Right. So among all these over 1,400 of log printing statement, we found that 36%, or more than one third of them, have been modified at least once as afterthought. Right. And here's a breakdown of all the applications, and we see that indeed this generally holds in all the applications. And in total, we found that there are more than 9,000 of such modifications made to the logging code. Right. Then what are these? Okay. So we further break down them into four categories. Okay. Now to explain these four categories, let's consider as kind of typical logging code look like this. All right. So of course, it contains a portion of static text describing the event. It will also contains a verbosity level indicating the criticality of this logged event, and also include some useful variable values. And also to write such log messages, developers also need to make a decision of where in the source code location to put such log messages. And indeed, we found modifications to all these four categories. But our first finding is that A little bit surprisingly, that only less than half of these modifications are made to the static content, right? Then what are the remaining ones? And we found that more than half of these modifications are actually made to the verbosity levels and the variable values, right? But in contrast, developers seldom move a log printing code or delete it once they are introduced, okay? And we guess one of the reasons is that once they decide to find some logging code is kind of useless, what they do instead of deleting them, they will just demote their verbosity level to kind of assign to debug. So now let's zoom into each category to understand why they are modified, okay? And what can we learn? So let's first start with the verbosity level. So here's a little bit of introduction or background on the verbosity level. That typically, each software we study, they have at least eight different verbosity levels. And we can divide them into three categories. So the first category is some fatal error event. It means that such log message will not only print to the error log, but they will also immediately terminate the execution of your software, right? And the second level is the non-fatal error events. So these events are often also enabled by default in the production environment, but they will not terminate the execution. And finally, there are some verbose levels such as debug that are typically not enabled under default production setting. And first, we found that actually a lot of these modifications occurs across the boundary between fatal errors and non-fatal errors. And in fact, we found that such modifications will not only impact the log printing behavior, but they will also impact the availability and the reliability of your system, right? So first, let's consider a real-world example. Okay, this is from Postgres. And there was an event, corrupted page pointers. And originally, developers assigned this event to be error, okay? But later, they found that such event is so fatal that they should not allow it to propagate. So they checked in a patch whose only purpose is to assign it from error to panic. And in their commit log, they found that, they say that doing this is to disallowing the execution to continue and stop the propagation of this kind of uninitialized host in the system. So in general, we found that for an error event, if it is for a fatal error event, if it's assigned with a non-fatal verbosity level, then it will likely introduce security or reliability problems in your systems. Right. And on the other hand, if an error event, a non-fatal error event was assigned with a fatal verbosity level, then it will impact the availability of your system. Right. Now consider another example. Now, in this error event, could not create a media file is actually not a non-fatal event, but originally developers was over-aggressive that they assigned it with a panic verbosity. So later, they checked in a patch to only change this to error, and they explained that in some non-critical cases, they should not let such an error to take down the entire database. Interesting. Well, I don't have the answer top in my head. But what we found is that because due to our study methodology, we found that in that patch, definitely they did not change the log printing condition. But whether they have additional log error handling code after the condition occurs, I'm not sure. Right. So. But in addition, we found that another nearly one-third of the modifications of verbosity level, they are between the non-fatal errors to verbosity levels. And this reflects that the developers often reconsider the trade-off between the overhead and the diagnosability offered by these log messages. So let's look at one example. So in this case, there was an error message, there was an error event that unrecognized configuration parameter. But originally, it was assigned with a debug level. Right? So as a consequence, a real-world user encountered this misconfiguration. But the system just failed silently, so he had no clue. Right? So he had reported to the developers. Later, developers just checked in a patch just to promote this error message from debug to error. Okay. On the other hand, if for some non-critical, non-error messages, they are assigned to an error mode, error verbosity, they will introduce overhead and noises in the log messages. So for example, in this case, the user complained that his error log is filled with all these non-error messages, and it's really annoying. So later, developers checked in a patch just to demote this log message to some debug level. Right? So now let's, and further, I will revisit this verbosity level changes to see how we can address this using some very simple techniques. Right? So we've also found that among all these modifications, there are a lot of modifications made to the variable values of each log statements. And in particular, we found the majority of them, or 62%, they are actually adding new variable values. Okay. And as an absolute number, there are over 1,500 of patches whose only purpose is just to add these additional variable values. And actually, the reason is not surprising. It's because without sufficient information, diagnosis is hard. And we have shown one of such cases earlier. And actually, one of our later two log enhancer is directly motivated by this finding. And we will show how we can automatically add these variable values. Okay. And also, we found that nearly half of the modifications, they are made to the textual content. Okay. We further break them down. We found, actually, a lot of them can be fixed or prevented by some very simple techniques. All right. For example, we found more than one-third of such modifications are fixing some out-of-date source code information. Right? What happens in these cases is that the log messages will often contain some hard-coded source code information, such as function name or file name or line number. Right? And for example, in this case, the developers decide to rename a function, but they did not consistently rename the function name in the log message. So later, when the log message was really used by them to debug, they found it was really confusing. Right? But actually, this can be easily solved by using some compiler support. That, for example, the C program language already provides such macros that hold the source code information. And we indeed found that some developers are using them to replace the original hard-coded source code information. And actually, some other problems can also be easily fixed. For example, we found a lot of times they will just fix the spell and the grammar mistakes in the log message. And this can be easily fixed, done by doing some spell checks. All right. Now, finally, as I said, that we found they seldom delete or move the location of the logging code. All right. So this indicates that as a developers, when you introduce some logging code at the very beginning, you should be a little bit careful because once it's introduced, it will be there. Okay. But then why they still remove them? Okay. We found that they will remove them if the existence of such log messages will cause some serious effects. For example, we found that a common mistake they make is to do log printing in some signal handlers. And we know that this will likely to corrupt the system state and result in some serious consequence of our system. Right. So we have found that developers have frequently made mistakes in assigning the verbosity levels. Right. So realized by this problem, we designed a very simple tool that can effectively detect some of the inconsistently assigned verbosity levels. Right. The idea is very simple, is that if there are two snippets of code that are very similar, and they all contain log messages, but the log messages are of different verbosity levels, the likely one of the verbosity level assignment is wrong. Right? So we implement this by using our previous tools called the CPMiner that detects a code clone from the source code. And then we further check if there's a log message in the code clone. Then if there is, we check whether the verbosity level is consistent. And for example, this is a real-world inconsistent verbosity level that is confirmed by the developers. Right. And so we have detected over 100 of such inconsistent verbosity levels in the 4 pieces of study software. And we reported some of them to the developers. And so far, over 30 of them are already confirmed and fixed in the latest version. Right. So what it all suggests is that developers frequently make mistakes in their logging code. And actually, a lot of these problems can be easily fixed either manually or automatically. Right. And next, I'm going to talk about one approach that address one of the problems, which is that the existing log messages often miss some important information. Right. So now let's revisit the motivation. Okay. What we have shown earlier is that some existing log messages, that they often do not have the useful var values at the beginning. And this will cause some unnecessary debugging burdens by the developers and the users. Right. And in particular, we found that in these 4 widely used open source software, there are over 1,500 of such patches just to add the additional variable values. Right? So now you might think that the previous example is trivial, and solving this problem actually can be simple. Now here I'm showing you another real-world problem, okay, a failure, just to show it. Sometimes it's complicated to know what variables you should log. Now this example is from RM. And in particular, this failure is because when the user tried to use rm-r to remove a directory, rm will fail and report something like cannot remove d1/d2 because it's a directory. Okay. Well, the correct behavior is for rm to just go ahead and remove it. And I'm also showing you the relevant code that printed this log message. Now, by looking at this piece of code, can you tell whether it's good? Can you tell whether the log message is good enough? And if not, what are the other parameters that we should log together with this log message? All right. So now to answer this question, let's consider how the developers use this code to debug. And here I'm showing you the control flow graph of the previous program. Right. So the first thing developers will do will be just to map it back to the source code location and start to infer backwards. And in this case, we know the log message is printed by this arrow printing statement. And we also know that it's printed because the unlinked system call failed. Unfortunately, in this case, the file name that triggered this unlinked system call to fail has been locked. All right? And we further know that it is printed because this value of its DIR is set to null. And this is something we can also infer from the log message. However, once we further continue our debugging, there will be complexity. That first, we found that there are 2 possible locations in the code that can set this DIR to null. And which one actually occurred depends on the value of DP. Right? But unfortunately, from the log message, we cannot infer the value of DP. And furthermore, we also do not know the value of DP type. And also some other variable values in the caller. Right? It turns out that to debug this bug, we need to know all of these. And clearly the log message does not tell us enough information. And also from this example, probably we can see that it is probably too much to ask the developers to manually infer such information of what to log in each log message. And this ideally if we can do it for them. So that's exactly the goal of Log Enhancer, which is a source level tool to enhance each log message to infer what are the useful variable values and put them into the logging code. All right, in the previous Apache example, Log Enhancer will automatically analyze the code and to infer the file name that should be logged. Right. And in the RM example, the Log Enhancer will automatically infer the value of DP along with some other variable values should be logged in this log message. And in these 2 cases, these additional variable values will be very beneficial to debugging. Right. So now, let's see how does log enhancer work. Right? So the first problem is, where are these useful variable values? Okay? And the idea is that these variable values are the ones that are used in the causally related branch conditions. Right? So a log message occurs, especially error message occurs at the runtime because the program falls into some corner cases. And the complexity of diagnosis is to reconstruct this program path. And the complexity is really if there are so many branch conditions involved and we cannot disambiguate them. So the goal of log enhancer is to identify those causally related branch conditions and to try to disambiguate them by recording the variable values involved, right? So that later developers can reconstruct the execution path. Then one straightforward way is that to record these variable values immediately after the branch is executed. However, doing this will likely introduce the overhead even during normal execution. And what we really want to do is to only record these variable values together with the log message to reduce the overhead in the normal execution. However, this will introduce some problems because some of the variable values at the log message, at the logging statement, they might become invalid. So we further need to check whether they are valid or not. And also, finally, we need to implement our logic to collect these variable values at the runtime. Right. So now, before I go into some details of log enhancer, I want to address some of the concerns you might have. Okay. So first, we use static analysis. Right. And we all know that static analysis is not precise on C code. Then what is the consequence on log enhancer? Well, it turns out that such consequence is not so big on log enhancer because in the worst case, we will either miss some relevant variable values or record some irrelevant variable values. But what we can guarantee is that such values we collect are indeed from runtime. So at least they won't mislead the developers or support engineers' debugging effort. And how about the performance overhead? Well, as we said, that we only log more parameters at the moment you print a log message. And as I said earlier, that under the default configuration of all the software we examined, only error messages are printed in the production run. So this means that in the normal execution, we do not introduce overhead. Right.
So I think like when you record, let's say that
we hope it's still live at the error message. Okay. Yeah, and there's some problem I'm going to talk about how we address that.
Is it really a high overhead if you cache that variable in RAM?
That's a good question. Actually, I think we have that the result in the paper. I remember on average it's like 10% of overhead doing that. Right. It really depends, like, what's the nature of your workload, right? If you are doing some CPU intensive workload, and if these things happen in some critical path, you're doing a lot of this caching. Right, but and also that if you are doing that, actually you need to consider once your buffer is full, what do you do? Right, if you decide to flush the buffer, it will be overhead.
Yeah.
I think that's the overhead we have. 10% is about that. If it's full, we flush to the disk. That's the kind of overhead we had. Yeah. All right, so. And finally, since we talked about privacy concerns earlier, then will this introduce some privacy concerns? Well, here we want to say that the variable values we record, they are about the system's own health. Okay, we are not intentionally leaking some privacy information. And also, there are not that many additional variable values that potentially, for privacy concerns, developers could manually examine them and remove some of them. Such as, for example, remove all the string type of variables. Okay. All right. So in the next few slides, I'm going to talk about the detail of log enhancer. So the first step is to identify those useful variable values. Okay. And when we do this using static analysis. So we start from each log printing statement and try to infer backwards. And in this case, we know that it is printed because that if condition if condition returned yes, then we know that the variable involved in such causally related branch conditions should be recorded. And we further go on and find another causally related branch condition. But in this case, we figure out that SDR, actually, we do not have to record the value, because given the printing of log message, we can deterministically infer that it must be null. So we do not record it. And further, we use the data flow analysis to find where it is actually written. We found there are two possible locations. And it further depends on two additional branch conditions. So we added the variable values involved into our candidate set. And finally, it reaches this branch condition, DP. We also put this into our recording candidate set, right? And since we are also curious about the variable values in the caller, so this process will be repeated recursively into the caller along this call graph statically. So the end of this step is that we have a set of candidate variable values we should record for each log message. But we cannot just blindly record them at runtime, because some of these variable values, they will not be valid. All right? So for example, in this case, this DP type is only valid under the condition that DP is not now. And if we just blindly record it at runtime, and if DP is now, then we will result in some segmentation fault because of no pointer dereference. Right? So in order to find such invalid variable values, actually, we made a simple observation that often in the programs, they already have such condition to check the validity of the program. And we can easily capture it from analyzing the source code. For example, in this case, before they will dereference the DP type, the developers will check whether DP is null or not. And such condition is also embedded in our static analysis. So we just use that so that for each variable values, we will know under what condition is valid. So at the runtime, we'll first check such conditions before we go ahead and record it. Right. And some of the variable values, they might be invalid because they are overwritten. Right? So let's consider this case. In this case, we want to record the value of A at the log point. Okay. However, the A might be overwritten before it's reached the log point. So if this happens, we can no longer record the value of A at the log point because it's already invalid. Right. Now to solve this problem, we perform liveness checking on each of the variable values we decide to record to see whether it is possible to be overwritten before reaching the log point. And also, we do not want to give up so easily on those modified ones, right? So if a variable is modified, we further want to recover it using some technique called the equivalent value identification. So for example, in this case, even A is modified. If we found such assignment that assigned the value of A to another variable before it's modified, then we know that, okay, we can reconstruct the value of A by simply recording the value of C, given that C is not modified before the log point. All right, so instead of recording A, we'll just record the value of C. And for the remaining ones where we cannot reconstruct, we can either simply give up, or we can add some additional overhead by caching them before the modification. Right. So finally, the output of this analysis will be for each log printing statement, what are the variable values we should record at runtime, along with their condition for them to be valid. And such variable values are not limited only to the local function, but also for the caller functions as well. And finally, we will modify the code. The modification is really simple, is that we just add an additional library call. Then at runtime, if this error message is really encountered, then our log enhancer library will first get those variable values from the table that we have generated statically to know what variables we should record. And then at the runtime, we will unwind the stack to know what are the functions that actually in the stack frames. And then we go on to record the variable values. And after that, we check the validity condition. Right. So now let's talk about how effective log enhancer is. All right, we evaluate it on, sure.
Sorry, maybe before you go on. So just to confirm that I'm hearing
Okay, so that's a good point in the sense that indeed we do not set a limit to our analysis. We just go as long as our static analysis stops, right? And this means that if you really have a very long call chain, and we will analyze each function. But also know that we are only recording the causally related branch conditions, which means that for each log message, actually, in comparing to all the variable values in the program, that's only a small slice. And also, what I haven't talked about, we also have some technique to remove the redundancy about within these variables. For example, you might pass this variable value into a Cauchy parameter, and you have a different name, but we have figured it out to remove the redundancy. So in the and also there are some practical limitations that our static analysis often cannot trace all the way back, let's say, to the main. For example, a lot of these software, they use function pointer, and we will stop at the boundary of function pointer. So all of these add up is that on average we will record almost 15 additional variable values only for each log statement. Good question. So actually, it leads to I can explain partly in our evaluation result. Okay, here what I'm showing is that we first compare, because each log message already have some existing variable values written by manually. We first compare whether we can identify them automatically, and we found that almost all of the software except Squid we can identify over 95%. It means that at least we match the manual intuition. But actually, if you think about these existing variable values, they are not so hard to infer because they are usually very used very close to the log message. And in fact, that's our observation that those ones that, for example, used closely with your log message, such as within the same function, those are the ones that we have virtually no problem. They are usually not modified. Even if they're modified, we can easily reconstruct them using some other variable values. But once it's getting further and further, those problems will occur, such as function pointers, where they may be modified that we cannot reconstruct their values. In our paper, we also have the number that how many of these variable values we just simply cannot reconstruct. I think on average there are 2 variables per log message. But on the other hand, that if you really consider the usefulness of these variable values, right, usually it's the closer it is to the error message, the more useful it is for debugging. As this gentleman just asked, like a variable value 10 functions away, you can hardly imagine it's useful or not, although we capture it. But whether it's valuable or not is questionable. So it means that it's likely those highly effective ones, we have no problem in logging them. Good question. We don't check. It's very hard for static analysis to do that. In that case, if it's modified by another thread, we will think it's not modified. But the consequence is that we will still log them at the runtime. Yeah. It could be misleading. Right. Actually, we try to be over-conservative. For example, we try to add, currently we don't use alias analysis, but we try to enable alias analysis, which can kind of also enable us to go all the way across function pointers. It's kind of significant, the number of variable values will just explode. So we found that actually the benefit is not worthwhile, right, to do that. All right, so I think I have less than 10 more minutes, so I'll skip all this, all right, and talk briefly about the future work. So first, these are some very premature thinking of what the future of logging and log analysis should look like, okay? So please attack me with any questions. Right? So, and since we are talking about failure diagnosis, Let's look at one of the most disastrous failures in recent years, it's Air France 447. Right? Let's see how important or what do we really want from log and log analysis using this as a case study. Right? So just some recapture is that, so this Air France 447 is scheduled to leave from Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, to Paris. And on 2009, I think it's May 31st, this air particular flight just crashed after 4 hours after landing, right, and killed all the over 200 people on board. Right. So now before we go on, why I'm talking about this? It turns out that modern aircraft is one of the typical example that the users, in this case pilots, are completely relying on logged data to understand the status of your flight and do some error troubleshooting if it occur, if it's needed. And this is the actual where the message is displayed on this particular aircraft, and they will actually see all this log event in this format. Okay, for example, this is a real log event that that is received by the pilots in that craft. This means that auto flight control is disabled, right? So what happened, right? Well, it turns, what happened is that the very initial event is that they first noticed that the displayed speed has some inconsistency, that it quickly dropped from 275 knots to 60 knots, all right? And so on modern aircraft, they will have some feature called so this is actually later in their investigation report, they found the reason is that modern aircraft will use something called a pilot probe to detect the airspeed. And in that particular case, it actually failed because there are some ice crystals. That's just, there are some icing. So they do not give the correct readings anymore. So because the aircraft cannot detect the correct airspeed, so the autopilot just automatically gets disconnected. And this is also reported to the pilots with log messages. Right? And then soon after the pilots detected, and in the cockpit, the FDR, flight data recorder, recorded that they said, we have lost the speed. But one of the actions they made to this error is that one of the pilot, they decide to pull back the stick, which resulted the aircraft just kind of increase its pitch attitude. So which is pitch attitude is simply this angle, right? So it's, he decided to climb the aircraft for whatever reason, okay? And actually, that is the root cause. Okay, as we know that if you keep increasing this pitch attitude, that at some point it will reach a threshold where something called stall will happen. That instead of giving you more lift of your aircraft, it will actually lose the lift and also lose the speed as well. Right? And about 20 seconds later, the speed display become valid again. But actually, at this moment, the pilots already decided to not trust whatever they read from the log message anymore, right? They're just flying the planes out of their whatever intuitions. And about another like 20 seconds later, there is some stall warning, okay? The stall warning is not only a log message, but they're actually signal warning, right? It means the air flight detected is stalling. But the pitch attitude continued to increase. It means the pilot continued to pull back the stick. And it remained about 13 degrees, which is high over, way over the limit. And it remains to the end of flight. And what is also noticed by later in the reconstruction, in the investigation, is that actually the pitch attitude value is also a locked event, all right? But this also has some problems, that it's successfully either between valid and invalid. And each time it's invalid, actually the stall warning will disappear. Okay, this might also mislead the pilots a little bit. And finally, because they keep increasing this angle and it just stalled, so they lose both the altitude and the speed, and eventually they crash into the Atlantic Ocean. Right. Now, okay, before I proceed to talking about log statement, logging, you might ask, well, can we just blame the pilots, right? So here I'm quoting the head of the BEA, which is the investigation organizations, in the news conference, they said that what appears in the crew behavior is most probably that a different crew will make the similar mistake. So we cannot blame the crew. And instead, in their later they released 25 of recommendations to how can we try to avoid this problem. And a lot of these recommendations are made to the system reactions to these errors, or in other words, to improve the logging, the log messages. Right? So this is the point I want to make. One is that we should improve, we should really improve the feedback of the systems. One of the reasons of this disaster is that the system reported some confusing and inconsistent log messages. And this is also a quote from the official analysis report. There are two examples. First is that at the beginning, they displayed an inconsistent speed. And also their log pitch attitude also become valid and invalid from time to time. And it is likely that from the very beginning, the pilots, once they detect this inconsistency, they just decided not to trust the log event anymore, right? So this means that not only the quality of the log data, but also the fidelity of the log data is important, especially in such real-time diagnosis scenarios, right? And also, this is another quote from the BEA report, that the electronic centralized aircraft monitoring messages, which one example is the automatic flight control got disabled, did not help any diagnosis, right? So actually, one implication is that currently, especially in this case, the log messages provide you the fact, where they give you what is the event. But instead, I think they should also provide some answers, or kind of what is the proper action you should do faced with this event, okay? So if you're only giving the fact to the users, in this case pilots, and since the system is so complicated and they are under this real-time diagnosis pressure, they can easily make some mistakes. And especially the complexity of today's systems grows so large that it is almost impossible for the human to reconstruct all this event to understand what the failure is in a very short time limit, right? So we can also see that in typical system today, such as the aircraft, it involves multiple components. And the log messages is emitted from all these components. So this indicates that correlating the logging event in our analysis between all these components can be an important problem to solve. And finally, we want to provide some real-time diagnosis support. That this is especially helpful in such scenarios. All right. So of course, log messages is not only used in diagnosis and management. And what the essence of log message is that it's a natural and effective way for the users to understand the system execution without reproducing the execution. And there are some other common uses of log messages, such as understanding the user experiences or auditing the functionalities. However, I think in terms of the desirable features of log and log analysis, the game remains unchanged. That the fidelity and the quality of log message is important, and log messages or log analysis should provide answers instead of just facts. And we need to correlate the log data between multi-components. And finally, in some cases, we need to provide this real-time analysis support. And I'll talk more about how to improve the quality of data in my Wednesday's talk this week. And I want to, before I conclude, I want to thank my co-authors and also the USENIX organization for the travel support. And I put up this note, this quote for you to read. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Please, yeah.
So you are asking me, sorry, I didn't, I don't think I can. I see, basically, you're asking that whether these log messages are helpful for like security?
Sure.
I mean, we didn't in particular talk about security problem, but again, for security, the first reaction of all the administrators in forensic is to check all the log messages from the systems. And of course, there is an issue that how the fidelity of your log messages if your machine is compromised. But I mean, if you can provide more log data in some corner cases, I think it will definitely help you for security attacks as well. Actually, we have experienced one or two such attacks through buffer overflow. But actually, if there was some log messages that could have detected the buffer overflow, it can be extremely helpful. I don't know if I answered your question.
Sounds like rank analysis would be a good connection.
Sure, right. Exactly, there are actually a lot of other techniques. I know some of the audiences are working on like deterministic replay for diagnosis troubleshooting. But logging, I think, is a way that is really cheap, and it is there since almost day one of the programming, and it's remained to be effective. So there are really different perspectives to address the problem. That's a good question. Actually, I haven't thought too much about it, but top in my head, there are several things. Well, you can learn from experiences. Right? You can learn from existing failures to see, okay, how do you do that? And in fact, that's the programming practice we found in real world, that in a lot of the log messages, especially those from commercial world, they will say, okay, you likely have a misconfiguration here, and likely you should check this parameter. And they are just afterthoughts. And they actually remain to be effective because majority of the users, they will encounter the same failure again. But for the, like, besides this, I think maybe leveraging something from code analysis, from the source code, can also be helpful. For example, if you detect, okay, this error message is printed by, let's say, malloc failed, then you could say maybe you have, right. Thank you.